Welcome to the Art and Science of Parenting podcast, where we discuss everyday parenting scenarios and walk you through the latest research on child development to help empower you to make informed parenting decisions. Welcome to Parenting, the Art and Science podcast. I'm Lisa Duffin, parent coach and educator.
And I'm Charlotte Hoyle, childcare consultant.
On today's episode, we are going to talk about a topic that I love and one that I have spent several years researching, and that is sleep. So why is it some babies struggle to sleep? What is the perfect sleep routine? And what is the best way to achieve a full night's rest? So this is such a huge topic. And honestly, sleep research is really still in its infancy, but the science has really come on leaps and bounds in the last few years. In this episode, we want to talk specifically about sleep in babies, all the way through to 5 and 6 year olds. We'll lean heavily on the latest research and then offer general sleep advice and practical steps that we share with parents we work with.
Indeed. So let's start at the beginning. Babies. The mystery of babies and sleep. What do we know at this moment in time, Lisa?
Well, firstly, we know getting your baby to sleep throughout the night is a universal human challenge. We know that it is fundamental for the baby's development as well as the parent's sanity.
Yeah.
And newborns are roughly spending 16 hours a day sleeping, which is extraordinary.
Well, I mean, you say that, not to me, because I probably have 14 hours of sleep myself.
Yes. Well, so, you know, six to six and a half hours sleep a night is still considered within the average range. Yeah. So for me, like 16 hours is extraordinary. Maybe I say that because there's still a lot of mystery around sleep and I'm just fascinated by it.
So why do babies sleep so much?
Well, sleep is a much more dynamic, multifaceted process than has been credited with in the past. For a long time, it was widely held that the brain shut down for all intents and purposes during sleep. But in fact, we now know that it is extremely active during sleep. We think better, for example, perform better and feel better during the day because of something that has happened while we slept. And so we need it for cognition as well as emotional and physical health. And it literally allows the brain to process and to learn about the world around us.
Okay, so you mentioned cognition. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yes, well, there are several studies on this, but a recent interesting one by the University of Massachusetts Amherst looked at sleep and memory in babies. And it was a small study. The research taught 9-month-olds how to play with a toy they had never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And the babies were shown 8 toys in total.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed them how to play with 4 of those toys in a certain way. So they modeled playing with them. And the important thing was that the researchers didn't play with the toy in a regular action that a baby might take that object.
Sure.
So they then gave the baby the toy to see if they could remember the way and demonstrate the way the toy was played with.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they did was they recorded brain activity in those babies using EEG. And then there were 2 scenarios. So the half of the sample of babies were in scenario 1, and those babies were kept awake during the time that they would normally be napping. And the researchers then checked if they remembered the actions performed with those toys. And then the second group in scenario 2 were the babies who took their normal nap. So the result of this experiment found that the infants remembered more of the toys and how to play with the toys when they took a nap versus not napping after learning. Yes. So some EEG recordings showed that the information stored in the part of the brain called the hippocampus, which is responsible in part for short-term memory,
yeah.
is transferred to the cortex, which is like another part of the brain, which is responsible in part for long-term memory. And in babies, the hippocampus is much smaller as it is in adults. So babies need to sleep in multiple sleep bouts, which as we know is two naps and overnight, because they have to take that information that has piled up in their short-term memory storage in the smaller space and move it to its permanent location more frequently than we do.
Sure.
So what does this really all illustrate? It really tells us that naps are important and that we need to value this time for our child. Mm-hmm. There is a function to sleep, and it's really the foundation of everything your child or your baby will go on to do later in life.
God, it's absolutely fascinating. So even though it's a really small study, sample size, it gives a lot of information and quite fascinating information, and really kind of tells us how important sleep is from a scientific background. So the two naps and the overnight sleep is the general pattern, but when do they learn to sleep like we do? Like, when do they learn that 16 hours is no longer necessary?
Well, some people only reduce to 14,
eh? Yeah. It's love my sleep. Is it like a gradual thing, or is it suddenly a particular month, or does everyone sort of move in their own kind of rhythm, if you like?
Well, yeah, in general, baby sleep is erratic early on, as we know, and eventually it does become regular. A recent study actually done at NYU, it was done with a huge amount of data, found that at 1 month old, there is no pattern of when the baby is sleeping.
Yeah.
Within 4 months, an initial cycle is beginning to emerge. And by 8 months, there is a hint of a pattern. By 12 months, a clear pattern emerges and babies are sleeping through the night. They sleep soon after the morning feed, about 5 hours later in the early afternoon, and then the overnight sleep.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because I'm not sure I would ever sleep train a baby that was less than 4 months old. Like, I certainly haven't done in the past, and I don't think I would now, obviously, in the future.
No, and I would certainly agree with that as well. And I'll go on to explain that a little bit later on. But first of all, I want to talk a little bit about what creates these patterns. Mm-hmm. So just very basically, all animals on this planet have a 24-hour cycle that is closely linked to the sun. Mm-hmm. And that's called a circadian rhythm. So for us humans, we're awake during the day and asleep at night. And this is regulated by the master clock in our brain, which is the part of the brain called the hypothalamus. This is not true for babies, however, and they do shift rapidly between sleep and wake. And over a course of 24 hours, they can have hundreds of sleep-wake cycles.
Mm. So why is this?
Well, some research by the University of Iowa suggests that the sleep-wake cycle is largely regulated in the brainstem, and the master clock area, the hypothalamus, is governing the circadian rhythms. So in newborns, these parts of the brain are not yet communicating with each other directly or indirectly. And this suggests that, as you've just mentioned, that prior to 4 months, there is very little you can do to help babies sleep throughout the night.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly I would not advocate either for trying to establish a sleep routine prior to this age.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's helpful to remember that your baby's brain is still developing. And in those moments of sleep deprivation, it might be helpful to remember that these connections will form, and you just have to wait for that to happen.
Easier said than done at 2 a.m. in the morning.
I know, absolutely. Absolutely. So post 4 months of age, what can you do if you recognize that your child is in a less than optimal sleep pattern? You shared a story earlier with me about one of your clients, Charlotte. Do you want to talk a little
bit? Well, yes. I mean, it reminds me of a sleep consultancy job I did with a five-year-old girl. And basically, there were no consistent boundaries during the day. The only consistency there was a barrage of idle threats, you know, not attached to sleep, but kind of, you know, if you don't eat your dinner, you're not doing this. If you don't do that, you're not doing that. And nothing was followed through. So by the time bedtime came and the little girl kept getting out of bed, you know, mum repeatedly said that the door was going to be closed. But by this point, the girl knew this wasn't going to happen and she just paid no respect to the threat. And the problem is that this then spirals out of control as the evening progresses, you know, because the mum then starts bringing in threats that are totally unrelated to the crime, if you like. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, stay in bed or you're not going to Zoe's party on Saturday. Well, this is going to fall on deaf ears to an overtired and defiant child. It's completely pointless. All it's going to do is stress everybody out. And I can guarantee it's not going to get anybody anywhere.
Yeah, and that speaks a little bit to the consequence being proportionate and relational to the behaviour. So, and you touched a little bit on a good sleep routine. So what do you believe makes for a good one?
Well, I guess for me, it's not just as simple as a sleep routine. It's about the routine as a whole over a 24-hour period. So for me, it's looking at a routine from 7 a.m. to 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. A child's well-being is absolutely paramount. We know that. And the routine provides the child with not only structure, but the feeling of feeling safe and secure. And sleep's a fundamental part of this. And as we discussed, there's definitely an age at which it's too early to train a baby to sleep. So, you know, I can only speak about my experiences and, you know, what I've done. And I've trained babies for 4 months and older with very little difficulty, you know, since baby sleep cycles are much shorter than a child or adults, you know, around 20 minutes compared to 90 minutes. And babies spend approximately half of their sleep in a light sleep. So after they hit the sleep regression at 4 months of age, this is when I personally believe there's like quite an easy period between 4 to 8 months that you can train a baby to sleep.
So like a window of opportunity, really.
Yeah.
And I guess that speaks to the science that I spoke on earlier, where by 12 months there is an established pattern. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, there's only hints of patterns. So I guess before a pattern is fully established and concrete is the time take the lead on it.
100%. I think to start training a baby to sleep at 12 months, I think is almost too late. Like, it can be done. And of course you can train a baby, you know, or a child, you know, if you haven't hit almost the critical period, I'm not saying all is lost. It's just that I think it would be hard for a baby to be sort of rocked to sleep for 12 months and then to be, in their eyes, almost abandoned whilst they're sort of sleep trained. I mean, they would learn, mm-hmm. and it would happen. I just think it's easier and almost kinder on the baby to do it at an earlier age, if possible.
Yes, absolutely. So when you say sleep train, what do you mean?
Well, for me, it's training is teaching a baby to self-soothe and ultimately sleep through the night, using the baby steps method, which I will go on to explain. I mean, when I say self-soothe and ultimately sleep through the night, I just want to say I do not advocate for the cry it out strategy. I feel, you know, parents who, or carers or whatever, just close the door at 7 p.m. and then whatever happens behind that door till the morning is just what happens, and they don't go in, they don't do it. Like, to me, that's cruel and unnecessary. I know some sleep consultants may suggest this is a viable strategy, but that's not what you're going to get from me. And if that's what you want, unfortunately, I don't think this podcast is for you necessarily.
Fundamentally, we both agree that we cannot recommend this cry it out strategy. For me, it's based on the developmental science. Mm-hmm. There's growing evidence to show that this has the potential to cause negative effects for the child later in life.
Yeah, for me, it's just morally wrong.
Yes. Yes. So we've got, yeah, we've considered this from different angles. Would you like to talk me through a sleep training routine then?
Yeah. So I guess if we kind of start with, you know, like we said, the kind of four to eight month sort of period, start with a baby. This is a general routine. And whilst this routine will work for most children, it's not a mold for all. You know, every child is individual. Please, please, when you listen to our podcast, please remember this.
Yes, 100%. So maybe it would be helpful to talk about who it would not be suitable or would not work for at first then.
I mean, you know, it wouldn't work for a baby with reflux, for example, or sleep apnea, or a baby with medical conditions. You know, I mean, that's quite a broad thing, but you know, I'm talking about a typical child. Mm-hmm. You know, when I discuss these sort of routines.
Yes.
So as I said, it's not just the sleep routine, it's the whole holistic approach. So you know, a baby's likely to be sleeping for say an hour in the morning around 9 o'clock, and then they'll have, you know, some outdoor time, some exercise, you know, maybe to the park, you know, not obviously their babies, so maybe in the swing, you know, just some kind of general fresh air, and then home for some play on a mat and general stimulation before they have a healthy lunch, which I would suggest always consists of some type of protein. And then time to digest this food, and then they're ready for their nap, about 2 hours. The child should go down, I would say, no later than one. You know, because then they can be woken by three, which mm-hmm. gives them enough time to have a nice afternoon before the nighttime. And if you need to wake your baby, it's quite a good idea to open the curtains and let the natural light in, because there's melatonin, which is a hormone that's released when it's time to go to sleep. And this is triggered in the darkness. So when the curtains are closed, your body's making this melatonin, it helps sleep. And then when you let the light in at waking up time, this prevents the melatonin being produced and allows our body to be more alert.
And wake us up more naturally.
Yeah, exactly. The afternoon should be fairly similar to the morning, outdoor time, exercise, you know, stimulation at home. And then the younger babies will probably have a short nap for sort of 20 minutes just to help them get through their healthy dinner and then their bath time. And once dinner's finished, I strongly advise that babies are taken upstairs, because this is where the actual bedtime routine begins. And then once the baby's upstairs, there's no going back, because once they're up, they're up.
Yeah, so once they're upstairs or in their bedroom, they're up for good. What's the significance of that?
It's the behavioural cue that the baby needs, really, to know that the day's over and the sleep routine's beginning. It's kind of, it's just a nice way for them to, it signifies to them that what's happened downstairs has happened and it's done and we're going upstairs and now it's the beginning of bedtime.
Yes.
So a nice warm bath, not too hot, obviously. Whilst you wait for the bath to fill, you can prep your area to make sure you have the pyjamas, nappy cream, any lotions and potions that you want to put on your baby. And it just then makes the after the bath a bit, you know, seamless. So you don't end up with a poor baby sort of lying on the bathroom mat, sort of crying, you know, cold and crying. Mm-hmm. No one wants to do that. A good way to test the bath water is using your elbow. Just make sure it's nice and warm. And it's also helpful to have a warm bathroom so that the water doesn't go too cold, you know, doesn't cool too quickly. And so that the baby's not cold when they're taken out of the bath. Yeah, make sure your baby isn't too tired by the time bath time arrives, which is why for younger babies, as I said, the sort of 20-minute nap, power nap before dinner is a good idea. And the reason you don't want them to be too tired is because, you know, bath time's supposed to be calm and relaxing time. It should be a pleasant and enjoyable experience for everyone. Not fun if you've got a poor, cranky baby. You know, and use the bath time to chat to your baby. You know, it can be a lovely bonding experience. And after bath, I'd say a lovely way to end the bath experience is a massage. Now, the thing about a massage is if you have to almost decide if it's something that you can do every single night or not.
Yes, I wanted, when you were speaking about the bath, nightly bath, I wanted to ask, is that going to be viable for all parents? And if it's not, what do you suggest?
Okay, so this is where, so I always say consistency is key. So you're either consistent and you do a bath every night, or you're consistent and not being consistent, which...
what do you mean by that? Please so explain.
Either you do bath and massage every single night and you make time, and no matter what, you make time for that to happen. Now, it's not easy if you're to do that. It's not... maybe not necessarily realistic for every parent or carer to be like, yes, I can make time for a bath. I can make time for a massage. I can put that time aside. You know, there's shift work. There's other siblings. You know, there's things that come up. And if you think that's going to be you, then you have to basically not do a bath every night and not do a massage every night and start it off from the very beginning almost, so that it's not something your baby expects. So they can come upstairs for the when you're up, and they're not necessarily expecting a bath, mm-hmm. or they have their bath, but they're not necessarily expecting a massage. Do you see what I mean? And kind of either be extremely consistent or be consistent in not being consistent.
But even in being consistent and not consistent, there is a consistency because...
Yeah, exactly.
It's a pattern.
Yeah.
So what your child is looking for and your baby is looking for in everything in life is the patterns.
Yes.
And that's, in my belief, is the kindest thing that you can do for your child, is to continue to give them a sense of certainty by following a pattern. Yes. And sleep is no different.
Yeah, because no child wants, you can't give your poor baby a bath and or a massage for 3 weeks and then suddenly not do it. And then expect your baby to settle.
It's no different from an adult. If you behave in a certain way towards an adult for 3 weeks and then suddenly you behave differently one evening, mm-hmm. they're going to have questions. So yeah. why would your baby be any different, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I agree. So once you've decided whether you're doing bath or massage or how you're going to do it, be consistent or be consistently inconsistent. You can then take the baby to the bedroom after bath, and you can carry them to the window and say goodnight to their street. I like it. Some people are going to be like, what? but for me, I think, you know, it sounds silly, but it helps to establish a really solid routine. So you go to the window, you say goodnight to, I don't know, Salisbury Avenue, for example. Obviously, everyone says goodnight to their own street. You know, and you sort of give a little wave as you and the baby close the curtains. Mm-hmm. And it's just another cue for them to know it's the end of the day.
It's another part of the ritual. And it's easy. I think that's
easy because you're going to shut those curtains every single night.
Yes.
So why not just add a good night?
Work with what you've got.
Exactly. Exactly. And usually at this point, I would put the baby into their sleeping bag just simply because that means there's less commotion when you're going to place the baby into the bed at sleep time. You know, that again wants to be as seamless as possible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at this point then, so the baby's in the sleeping bag, they're going to have the milk and some stories, both of which are extremely soothing to the baby and, quite frankly, to you. You know, that bedtime when they're so snuggly and they're a bit dozy is just a wonderful time of the day. And once their milk's finished or they've had enough, give them a little wind. And then they can be carried to the cot. And it's this action when you're walking from the chair to the cot. That's when I kind of give them a kiss, give them a stroke, you know, do whatever you like, you know, just the kind of the good night, so that when you place them into the cot, awake, because you're trying to teach them to sasu, do not let them fall asleep on you.
Crucial point.
Crucial point, because when you put them in the cot, they will wake up. And you started to sleep train at this point. That's just a disaster. So try and keep them awake. Give them the comforter, you know, whether it's a dummy, whether it's a blanket, whatever it is that they like. Say goodnight to them and quietly leave the room. Now, this
you
is
you make
the
it point. Sound so easy.
I know, well, I was going to say, this is the point where you hope not to hear them till the morning, but obviously easier said than done. And if this was the case, I'd be out of a job. So... So what I can discuss now is, so you've had a really nice day, you've had a really nice evening, baby's asleep in bed, baby wakes up. Now, this could be at any point, it might be 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 3 o'clock. I'm going to talk you through what to do. If you hear your baby, I suggest waiting outside for 3 minutes. Now, time this, because 3 minutes in the middle of the night feels like an absolute lifetime. And if there's whimpering after those 3 minutes, I suggest at that point you wait another 2 minutes and you reassess. If there's crying, like proper sobbing, and you don't feel comfortable, I'll give you a reprieve and I'll let you, I think it's good to go in, because you don't want to be completely anxious. You don't want to be trying to soothe the baby later on in the evening when you're, you know, you're just then on the edge.
When your cortisol is heightened.
Yeah, and your baby senses it and they're not going to calm down. So if this is the point, if after 3 minutes, everyone's at high alert, you just go in, lie your baby down, give them the comforter. You know, if they have one, or give them a little stroke on their cheek, or, you know, pat their back. I'm only talking for a couple of seconds. I'm not saying stay there all night. Just a couple of seconds. Just let them know you're there and all's well and give them a little shh. However, the golden rule, no speaking. Okay?
This is so important.
It is really important.
And this speaks to the sensory needs and sensory overload. And what you're trying to do is limit the sensory stimulation.
Absolutely.
It's... like we've mentioned, it's so difficult to do, especially...
It is, because your whole being is geared, wanting to comfort your baby.
Yeah, you're geared towards it. And
it's your maternal instinct.
Or paternal. And at 3 a.m. in the morning, your emotional brain is maybe slightly more active than the logical parts. and so it's harder. It's harder to stand back for those initial 3 minutes to reassess for another two. And
yeah,
you'll maybe find that your feet are moving before your brain has even realized what you're actually doing.
Yeah.
And you've entered the room. So some really practical things that you might want to consider doing is putting a little post-it outside the child's bedroom door. Yeah, basically like 3 minutes, 2 minutes, only go in if,
yeah,
and then huge no speaking. Just to remind yourself, so because you're training yourself to get into a pattern
of
too,
course.
I think that's important to note, is that you're leading, so you have to stick with your rigid boundaries in order to teach your child boundaries.
Absolutely, 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 absolutely. I was just, you know, it's only recently that I was working sleep training a two-year-old. I literally had to wrestle with the father to stop him from going in. Like, you know, and his, every morning he'd be like, but my, you know, my head said no, but my heart said yes. And I'm like, I know. But however, how grateful are you 4 days later that your child is now sleeping 7 till 7? Like, unfortunately, it's tough. And I'm not taking that away from anyone. It is seriously tough. But, you know, no pain, no gain. So... as I was saying, I got sidetracked. You walk out, I'd say wait for another 5 minutes. Again, time it. And if the baby's still crying, go back in, repeat the process. Just lie them down, no speaking, give them a comforter, give them a stroke. Let them know there's someone there that loves them and does care for them.
But non-verbally.
Non-verbally, it's just not playtime. You know, basically the rule of thumb is just don't speak. and lengthen the time. So you've done 2 minutes or 3 minutes, you've done 5 minutes. Now you have to do 7 minutes and then you have to do 10 minutes. And hopefully, you know, the baby will self-soothe, the baby will fall asleep and he will, you know, you will get there and it's tough.
And basically what you're doing there by increasing the time every night is you're scaffolding for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to make your life easier and your baby's life easier in the long term.
Yeah, of course.
So the sooner, post 4 months old, mm-hmm. the sooner you can get into this rhythm and this pattern together, the better it's going to be for everyone's well-being, emotional, physical, yeah, and mental.
I agree. But I'm also wary that parents are listening to this with older children. I do not want them to think all is lost or they've done a bad job. You know,
no,
it's fine. Like,
no parent shame here at all.
No, absolutely no parent shame.
And also, like we've mentioned, this is for a typical child. Mm-hmm. There will be children out there that just will be exceptions to this.
Well, they don't even need sleep training. They sleep from like 3 days old and that's it. You know,
or the other end of the spectrum where, you know, they don't sleep for a long, long time for, and that there may be underlying reasons for that, as yeah, we've explained.
So should I talk about how routines differ for older children?
Yeah, it might be nice to just touch on that as well then.
Because there's not really, I mean, the same principles, you know, same principles apply throughout the day, healthy meals, exercise, proper stimulation. For me, screen time needs to be preferably before dinner. You know, every child wants to be on a screen. It's unrealistic to say they can't be. Just get it out of the way as soon as you can. Have a nice dinner. And then once again, upstairs, no going back. Once you're up, you're up. And again, it's a cue for children as well. And especially at that age, they completely understand.
Developmentally, they're further along.
Yeah. So they have their bath, they brush their teeth, they have the last trip to the loo, they have their chill out time. What we know is older children love a distraction at bedtime. They love a distraction anyway, but especially at bedtime. They love to stall the process. So ensure that everything's done by the time they get into their bed for stories. You know, no more I need the loo, no more I need a drink. It's done. They're in bed, finished. And keep to the same amount of stories, you know, so the child knows what to expect. There's no point doing 2 stories one night and then 3 stories because then the next night they'll want 4 and then 5. And then before you know it, you're reading every single book in the child's library.
You know it, you've lost the negotiation.
Yeah, you've totally lost the negotiation and you're up till midnight reading stories. Also, where older children are concerned, remember that if you sing a song or do a puppet show or whatever, they will expect that every single night. So again, consistency, keep it simple or prepare to commit because you will.
Yeah, and really sit down with whomever you're parenting with or if you're on your own and think about what is sustainable for yeah, you. What does your life look like? What does the child in front of you need? I mean, we haven't touched on this yet, but your child may have different levels of sensitivity to different forms of sensory input. So, I mean, maybe a story is overstimulating for your child. Mm. So what are the alternatives? And you will only really learn this by learning about your child yeah, and watching and observing. And it's going to be a bit of testing to and fro until you get the right routine that works for you. But it is worth it, obviously.
It is worth it. And remember that older children can speak. They can negotiate or at least try to, and they can manipulate. And so it's
not in an intentionally bad way, though.
No.
I mean, it's good that they're learning to negotiate, right?
They pull on the heartstrings, should I say that?
Yes.
You must be strong and consistent. That's all I can say. A child can sense the weak parent and will target them. You know, so they'll be the one that will be like, oh, well, let so-and-so put me to bed, because knowing they're going to have extra stories or they can stay up later or the rest of it. So like Lisa says, you know, if you're co-parenting with somebody, then, you know, have an open dialogue with them and make sure you're both on the same page and stick to it.
And yeah, that dialogue goes for the older children as well. So,
oh yeah, in any scenario.
Absolutely. So communicating before what's going to happen. So we're going to start this, if you're starting a new routine, for example. So we're going to try this new sleep routine. This is what it's going to look like at this time. This is going to happen this time. This is going to happen. And stick to what you've said, what you've outlined. Mm-hmm. Follow the process to the letter. And the next morning with the older children, you can review the process.
Absolutely.
Again.
You know, and if you're that way inclined, you can bring in a reward chart. You know, and they can get a sticker or, you know, something that will encourage them, anything that will encourage them to stay, you know, in bed. And research shows that consistency results in a better sleep routine for children. So everyone just needs to kind of be working off the same page.
Yes, 100%.
I just want to say quickly that I'm quite well aware that when a parent feels that they've cracked the sleep issue, you can absolutely guarantee that their child will then suffer from a cold or teething.
Sod's law.
Yeah. And just don't panic. Just kind of soothe them through that. You know, it might be a couple of days or whatever. And, you know, if they need more time, you know, if they're crying out in the night and they're in pain because they're teething, you know, the baby steps in and out, it's not going to work. You know, just go in, just soothe them, help them through this period. And then once that's over, just jump straight back onto the original routine. You know, and just waste no, you know, just get back on it and don't worry about, just don't waste any time, just do it.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask, in your experience, is there like a period of time that you see as a general pattern for when a sleep routine is a routine for children? Or for babies, let's say babies, does it take like 2 days generally? Does it take 10 days? Does it take a month? Or is that dependent on multiple other factors?
It completely depends on, you know, I've spent, 10 minutes talking to you, giving help and advice on how to get your baby to sleep. However, every parent has to remember that every child is different and has different needs, and you have to follow your instincts. And as you said before, parent the child in front of you. And to be honest, you know, I've literally done sleep consultancy only, I don't know, 6 weeks ago? And the baby was sleeping through the night after two nights. I mean, it was incredible. Even I thought, wow, that's pretty swift. And then other babies can take longer. So you can't have this almost competitiveness between parents. The average is probably about a week, mm-hmm. if I had to give point blank answer. But if it takes you a few days, then brilliant. If it takes you a couple of weeks, and you just kind of have to go with it. But all I can say is, without sounding like a broken record, the more consistent you are, the easier it will be.
So only steps forward, no steps back.
Yeah. And, you know, I've had so many consultations with parents, and again, not parent shaming at all, but you know, they'll say, well, how did last night go? I didn't go in, I didn't do anything. Okay, tell me about your night. Oh, well, then he woke and I went in and then I picked him up, and it's almost like they don't hear themselves, like, so
which is probably a side effect of sleep deprivation as well. Yeah. Let's be honest, and like, yeah, just mental overload.
So just try your best to be consistent. And I think actually what you were saying about putting notes on the door.
Prompts for yourself.
I think that's an amazing idea.
Yeah, me too. So this is a huge topic that we have only just scratched the surface on.
I know, it's massive, isn't it?
And so exciting for me. So there are other issues that impact sleep and routines, such as nightmares, night terrors, which are more evident in 3 and 4 year olds.
Yeah.
And then there is this other huge topic of temperament. And I wish we had time to cover some of these now. But
we've taken up enough of your time.
Yes, we have. We hope that you find this episode helpful. If you would like us to cover any of these in future podcasts, then please get in touch at coaching@lisaduffin.com or
charlotte@nurture-consultancy.co.uk. And if you've got any specific questions relating to your child, children, about sleep, sleep routines, please don't hesitate to get in touch. I'm available on email all the time. And so that just leaves me to say, until next time, stay well, keep positive, and stay consistent.
Bye.
Bye-bye.